Writers After Hours. Love, mental health, motherhood, spirituality. These are all subjects that Sherelle explores in her poetry. She is a bold voice on the Manchester scene. I asked her to describe how she got started.
I feel like it's just always been the way how I've kind of processed my emotions, and I'm a real feeler, you know. Yeah. I'm an empath and I feel everything all the time, and I've always been like that from a really young age. So being able to write about that and keep it to myself and not having to expose myself and share that with other people, because I wouldn't, I never was someone that would have like spoke about how I was feeling in certain situations or anything. So yeah, it kind of just always has been something that's been a tool for me more than anything. Yeah, I think I dabbled more in my teens, started writing more at that point. And I remember there was a moment where so my dad had moved to London and we still lived in Manchester, and so I'd go down and see him, you know, a couple of times a year during school holidays and stuff like that. And there was one time where I went down, and my dad's a musician, so he had a studio at home and stuff, and we'd always like write together and stuff like that. And I wrote a poem, and I gave it him, and then the next time when I'd come back during like the Christmas holidays or whatever, it was like framed on his wall. And I think that's is something that's kind of always stuck with me, and I think that for me was like something that, one of those moments where it gave me like that little kind of push to like spur me on and keep doing this kind of thing, and maybe to share it a little bit more as well. And then I think, like, you know, back in the MySpace days, I don't know if you remember.
Yes, I remember.
So back in the days of MySpace, I definitely posted a few poems then. I think it kind of opened me up to a criticism that I wasn't really ready for. And that then kind of forced me back into my shell a little bit. And I just kind of, it again became like a real kind of private pursuit. And then, yeah, you know, throughout like early years of motherhood and stuff like that, it's been, you know, just that tool that every time I need to dig myself out of a hole, that's the go-to method. And so, yeah, fast forward to a couple of years ago. So like just before COVID, I had bought a business. I was a pastry chef for a long time, and I'd bought a dessert shop. And 2 weeks later, COVID arrived in the UK, and the whole world went into lockdown. And it just gave, you know, something that I'd spent a long time dreaming up and finally felt like I'd accomplished. It really like made it that much more difficult to enjoy the process and to really kind of do what I wanted to do with the business. So I feel like by the time I got the business to where it was, you know, functioning for itself, and you know, it was self-sustaining, and I was able to like dabble in a lot of projects that I enjoyed through it and stuff like that, it just kind of became really overwhelming for me, and my relationship, my marriage had broke down at the time. So there was like a really short space of time where I'd like kind of made this massive decision to walk away from my business, and I had an opportunity to sell it, so I sold it, and it was just really like overnight, like very in the moment decision. And my relationship had completely broke down at that point, and I was like juggling kind of being a single mother for the first time and also being single for the first time, not being part of a relationship. So I met my husband when I was 16, and we'd been together for like almost 20 years at that point. So going through that whole process, the only thing I could do was write, and I'd kind of got a couple of jobs in kitchens and tried to do like continue my chefing career, and I just wasn't in a headspace where I could, I just couldn't do it. I couldn't do that job well and do motherhood well and still hold myself together at the same time.
Right, yeah.
And I was writing so much at that time anyway, it was kind of like, okay, let me share what I'm writing and see if I can maybe just use this as a way, because it's all I seem to be able to do right now. Yeah, like, it's the only thing I'm doing well right now is just writing, because it's just pouring out of me. So let me see if I can kind of find a way into this in some way. Mm. And like, that was January last year that I really made the decision to kind of pursue this as like a full-time option. My nana had just passed away, and the day after her funeral I got fired from my job. And that was like, that was it for me. Like, I was like, okay, I don't need any more messages from the universe. I know the direction that I need to go in now, and I just kind of did, and I've not really looked back. And you know, I'm working on projects now that incorporate poetry and cookery, and working with young people, and like doing all the things that I enjoy doing. And it, I'd like, it's almost like there couldn't have been another way for me to get into it. It had to be this way around. But at the same time, I'm like, oh, why didn't I do it sooner, you know?
But maybe like you needed that experience, like to make you really focused and like kind of feel that sense of,
definitely, like,
this is everything. You want to put everything into it.
I feel like, for me, something that I've noticed that is it seems to be like a common kind of theme that keeps coming up when I'm speaking to female writers specifically. Is this kind of imposter syndrome, and this kind of the difficulty in sharing our work and acknowledging the value of the subject matters that are specifically related to female experiences. And I think for me, having that validation from audience members when I've performed has really like helped make me kind of keep putting one foot in front of the other with this. Because there's so many times where I've just been like, I can't do this anymore. I'm not good enough to kind of continue on this road and like make a good living. And, you know, I've got mouths to feed, and, you know, it's not easy to make, you know, the kind of money that I would make as a chef, as a writer now, and so, and it's very like new territory for me as well. So I'm going from doing, you know, a kind of, what's it called? Vocational kind of career path to what is kind of a little bit more of an academic kind of career, I suppose. And I don't have the credentials for it, so it's kind of like trying to like believe that I am good enough without having those accolades, and just off of the back of the value of my voice and the stories that I tell and what I actually have to say, like that has to be enough, you know? I can't afford a degree in this day and age, you know? You know, the government are kind of making sure that it is kind of a completely elitist pursuit to to kind of attend uni as you know, an adult learner and stuff like that as well. So I think, for me, just kind of being embraced in different poetry communities and finding like a group of women that all support each other has been like massive catalyst in like moving me forward and kind of keeping me going, motivated and stuff.
And creating spaces, like definitely I think like through like the Poetry Place and Centrally Spoken Word, like you're like creating those spaces and thriving, you know, like the Poetry Place is like one of, if not the like most popular spoken word night in Manchester, and like Centrally Spoken Word, so unique. I wanted to talk to you about Centrally Spoken Word, actually. How did you, like, what was your like main motivation, and like did you have any like anxiety about like having a night specifically on like things that are more to do with like intimacy and like that sort of like those sort of topics? Like, I'm really curious.
So Like I said, I've been on this journey the past couple of years, and my husband and I were separated, and that was like the first time that I'd really kind of been on my own as an adult. And I feel like having that time where we were in separation, and I didn't think that we would find our way back to each other either at that point. It was like, okay, there's no way of like salvaging this relationship. That's where we were at. And I was kind of thinking about, and a lot of the times people ask questions as well about, you know, oh, you're moving on and all this kind of stuff. And you know, like I'd get a lot of those kind of questions, and I wrote a piece called By Design, and then I'd performed that a lot, and it always kind of resonated with the audience and stuff. And then I think just off of the back of having those kind of conversations about moving on and thinking about what do I really want in a relationship. And at the time I was practicing celibacy, and I wrote a piece called Breaking Celibacy about, okay, in order for me to break my celibacy, this is the type of connection that I want to have with someone. This is the type of experiences I want to be able to to freely explore and enjoy without there being any kind of judgment or anything like that. And Breaking Celibacy was born. The first time when I performed that, there was like a few other poets in the audience that had came to me and said, you know, oh, I've got loads of work like that, you know, about sex and stuff like that, but I'm just not brave enough to perform it just anywhere, and there's no real space for it and stuff like that. And automatically, like, I have a very entrepreneurial spirit. So I was very much like, okay, well, I guess I'm going to create that space then. And I didn't really know how I would do it, but I was just like, yeah, it's something that needs doing. And, you know, who better to do it than me? So then, I think over the coming months, the idea just kept rattling around and it wouldn't go away. So when I get to that point with an idea that it just won't leave me alone, then I'm like, all right, how do I bring it to life now? And that's the same way how most of my poems come to me as well. It's like a constant niggle that won't go away until I get it out and write it down, and then it'll give me a bit of peace. but yeah, I think we did the first one. Oh, I can't even fully remember. I think it was towards the back end of last year. And then I did another one in December. And I think I did one this year as well. And it is something that I just keep meaning to pick it back up. But this year's just been kind of, I think for me this year has really been about kind of extending my skill set a little bit and getting kind of bits of knowledge that allow me to overcome this kind of imposter syndrome that I'm experiencing in the spaces that I go in and stuff. So I've really focused on doing that this year. So I've not necessarily put as much time and energy into like creating the big events and, you know, the stuff that kind of is far more of a passion project for me, if I'm honest. So but I think next year I've got like quite a few things planned to do with Essentially Spoken Word. Nice. I feel like a big part of wanting to create an event like that is also in bringing audiences from outside of the poetry community to experience the poetry community, because I think poetry is something that everybody needs, something that everybody can benefit from, like witnessing or participating in. And I just don't think that everybody knows that they need it. And I think a lot of the time people have this preconception about what a poetry event is and what it will be. And so I wanted to create a space that would be perfect for like a date night, for example. So couples will come there not because they're into poetry, but because, oh, it's something different for us to do on a date night, and it's romantic. And then you know, naturally they'd see that, see what's going on, and it would open their minds to show up at other poetry events and buy tickets, and then artists can get paid, and, you know, we can create this kind of self-sustaining, you know, environment that works for everybody. Because right now, you know, I feel like a lot of the time poets are performing for free, and you know, and I don't want to say like they're being exploited, because I, you know, I know a lot of the times there's, you know, I'm more than happy to perform for free. I love the spaces that are being created, and definitely if there's a specific cause or something behind it that is close to my heart, like, I'd never have an issue with doing that. But at the same time, it takes a lot to do what we do.
Yeah.
And the fact that it's always expected to be given away for free, and it's undervalued in that way, it's quite disheartening. And I feel like it's something that really needs to be changed from inside the community, as well as you know, bringing people from the outside in as well. So yeah, I think that's generally that was kind of like another angle, another part of the idea of like doing it in that way, marketing in that way as well, like as a date night event and something to enjoy with your partner, and, you know, a really kind of inclusive environment that welcomes, you know, everyone regardless of their sexual orientation or, you know, all of that kind of stuff. It's just a safe space for us to, you know, love on love a little bit, you know. I feel like a lot of the poetry spaces as well, you know, when people come into these spaces and they speak on love, it's always, it can oftentimes just be from like the negative sides of love. And, you know, sometimes it's nice to create spaces that are just positive spaces for the sake of immersing yourself in that positivity. And, you know, I like to create spaces that I want to inhabit. So, like, I'm like, what would be my ideal date night? A really romantic, lovely, like, positive energy setting, you know, where people speak on love. And we have beautiful conversations around that. And, yeah, some of the conversations that have been had just like midway through an event, you know, and yeah, it always comes from unexpected places as well. And it's just really interesting to hear all the different perspectives that come out in that environment where it is very like, you know, let's love on love a little bit. What does it mean to you? And, you know, especially like a lot of like the male contributions to them spaces of being like, really eye-opening and educational as well, you know, like
I'm sure
from a female perspective, it's really interesting to understand like what do men prioritize, what do they see as like, you know, because we can try all we want to be perfectly pretty and keep our house clean and all of that, when in actual fact what your man might want is just like someone to have a conversation with him about how his day went and how he's feeling today, you know, show support in those kind of ways.
It's getting to the like the nuances of it, because it's like, like I said, it's either you can often hear like breakup songs, breakup poetry, or like the opposite, which is like Valentine's Day, you know. So it's finding like what does the day to day look like, you know, and what are actually each of our needs and desires, because a lot of that, again, it can be like conditioned, or we expect like we should we should want to, you know, want certain things and enjoy certain things, you know, but we're all different. We've all got different tastes, you know, just like we all enjoy different meals, we all enjoy different things, you know, with our partners and, you know, in that sort of sense. So yeah, I think it's like really important like that, you know, to have that space. And
I think a lot of the times we're fed very like narrow narratives about what a good relationship is, what that looks like, what roles people play within that, and you know, there's not like a one size fits all to relationships, and there isn't a one size fits all to how to love your partner either, because everybody needs different things at different times, and that fluctuates within a day, within a span of a week, a month, a year, like it's ever evolving. And actually, like, sometimes it's nice to have somebody say, you know, I mess up like this, but I hope you know that I still do this, this, and this. And you're still here. You're still the one person that I want to kind of share my life with and spend that time with. And, you know, it's important. I feel like something that I've learned through the breakdown of my relationship and us kind of coming together and doing this in a really kind of healthy way that neither of us have ever witnessed or participated in before has, like, it's really, like, opened my eyes to the power of good communication within your relationship. And, like, if you can get that one bit right, like, it has such a massive impact on the whole picture. Like, and sometimes, I don't know, you just don't know where to start. And I think spaces like Sensually are definitely kind of like a breeding ground to bring that out and to open the difficult conversations that people tend to avoid, which cause the gaps and the distance, you know?
And I feel like poetry can, like, open up, like, you know, talking about things in abstract and very specific ways that in, like, everyday kind of conversations we might just be even scared or not have the language for in, like, the terms of, like, everyday just, like, sentences or something, you know what I mean? Whereas poetry kind of, like, allows you to explore emotions and, like, dynamics in quite a unique way.
I'd say that's definitely something that comes up in a lot of the conversations I have post-performance is, like, oh, you literally said what I want to say, but I just don't have the words for, you know? And I think, yeah, there's so many of us like that where we know, we have an idea of what we want, but we don't necessarily know how to articulate that or, you know, how to put it in a way that can be well received.
He'd be able to read my mind. He needs to know how to create worlds or at least be open to figuring it out. And he should spend some of his time living in a bubble in a world of his own that I can try and map out, find all of his hidden crevices and cracks and hold up a mirror to them all, help him feel comfortable with it being like that. I wanna be his safety, I wanna hold.
It's interesting because, like, you've gone from describing how when you were younger you were more of, like, an introvert or kind of someone that would process and, like, you know, you'd close yourself away, but then now you're, like, you know, you're a performer and, like, I know you're recording your, like, poetry EP, so is that just, like, as you've kind of grown up, or is it, like, do you still have to, like, really gear yourself up before a performance? Or
good question. It depends on the space. I still, like, I have social anxiety and it affects me to varying levels on, like, any given day or in any given moment, you know. I think sometimes it spills over into my performance a little bit. I feel like as long as I'm well prepared for a gig, then I feel like I'm all right. But like, the points when I'm performing my work, I'm fine because I've rehearsed that, I know it, I know what I'm doing there. The little bits in between where I have to, like, keep the conversation going.
Audience engagement.
They're the bits that get me, and, you know, I'm still working on it. I'm working on my hosting skills and stuff and, like, getting more comfortable on stage in that way. But I feel like it's a big journey and I have to, like, really take note of how far I've come. To just be able to get up on stage and perform is, like, massive for me. So, you know, I'm not going to beat myself up that, sometimes my nerves get the better of me or whatever. It's just a learning experience, isn't it? So,
Yeah, definitely. And how, I mean, how did the EP sort of come about? And, yeah, tell us a bit more about that.
So, I applied for the Developing Creative Practice Fund from the Arts Council. this time last year, actually, and I was awarded the fund, which meant I got to spend like all of the past year pretty much just kind of working on different creative Amazing. Things yeah. and developing my practice. And mm-hmm. part of that was I wanted to put together a body of work. And yeah, I'm really proud of what we've created. I'm working mm-hmm. with an incredible producer called Fiaz. Mm-hmm. And yeah, we've got like a really good launch planned for the project and stuff. And mm-hmm. A big part of the launch is in kind of introducing the network that I've kind of created through navigating kind of creative spaces yeah. in like Central and South Manchester, and trying yeah. trying to get them to network with North Manchester artists and creatives, because I feel like there's not enough money this side of Manchester. There's not enough being put into the spaces and the, you know,
what, local culture.
I shouldn't have to go to town every time I want to do a gig. Like I shouldn't have to go into Manchester to find some great art or to stumble on a great spoken word performance, or you know, I feel like this stuff should be available within our communities as well.
Yeah,
and unfortunately there just isn't, and I think a lot of that is due to like the lack of funding, the lack of you know, like just resources being put into these kind of areas out in communities just outside of Central Manchester and stuff. I feel like to kind of try to build some bridges there would be like really beneficial for everyone. So that's kind of the ethos around the event itself and stuff, for the launch. And I'm hoping to like build on that over time and, you know, create more networking events and stuff as well.
Nice. Do you have a title for your EP? Is that under wraps?
No, I can share that with you. That's fine. The title's By Design. So I decided to use By Design as a title track because I just feel like it was such a pivotal kind of poem for me. It really kind of paved the way for the direction of my work and a lot of what I've created since writing that piece like nearly 2 years ago now has come off the back of the responses and reactions that I've had from that piece as well. So I kind of wanted to just give it its little like props and it's one of those ones as well that honestly, like, I don't even think it came from me, and I was holding the pen, but like that's all I did. So it's kind of just giving a little gratitude to the art, I suppose.
I'm curious, as a writer myself and Common Word, we work and support supporting writers at the beginning of their journey right up to publication. So who or what has helped you most on your journey? Do you have a particular ritual or a mentor, or just what's been like your biggest support?
Oh, that again, a really good question. I would say two things. So collaboration, like collaborating with the Poetry Place was like a massive kind of step up for, like it probably accelerated my presence and what I was able to do, the journey a lot quicker. And obviously working so closely with Gabriel gave me like a lot of insight into different techniques and practices and stuff that he uses as well, which has definitely helped expand on my own practice. And I feel like that was like a mutual kind of exchange between us. And then aside from that, I would say definitely just, as bad as it sounds, getting like validation from members of the audience. So there are times when I'll do a gig and I'll come home from that gig and feel like, oh, it didn't go very well and I'm really disappointed in my performance or whatever, and then I have someone message me like the following day and be like, oh my god, thank you so much for last night. You probably don't realize, but you really helped me with this situation, or hearing you speak gave me kind of autonomy over my own voice and able to have this really difficult conversation that I've wanted to have for a long time, or, you know, things like that. And for me, like, these little messages of like gratitude always seem to come at times when I'm like questioning my own ability and my own place in the world. And so I just kind of take them as like signs from the universe to keep going. And it keeps me motivated.
Yeah. Positive side of social media.
Yes. Yeah.
Cool. And you mentioned about being a pastry chef. And yeah, again, I'm curious, like, how did you get started on the path to being a chef?
So from like leaving school, I kind of worked doing like cleaning jobs and stuff like that. And then like once I was old enough, I did like a bit of bar back in. Then I worked as a barmaid, and then I was working doing like waitressing and as a barmaid in a pub. And the chefs must have gone out the night before on a Saturday night and, you know, couldn't make it into work on the Sunday. And it was like the busiest day for the pub. So they'd hired an agency chef, and he was like, oh, he's going to need a hand in the kitchen. But they didn't want to get two agency chefs, so I kind of nominated to help out. And I'd never worked in a commercial kitchen space before, but I'd always enjoyed cooking. And I'd always like cooked from a really young age with my mum and stuff like that. And like was obsessed with cookery shows growing up. Like it was all I really watched, like Ready, Steady, Cook, Can't Cook, Won't Cook, all that kind of stuff. So then the chef that they'd hired from the agency was kind of like, oh, you're pretty good at this, have you ever thought of like doing it in college? And at the time I had like no real direction of where I was going career wise or anything, so thought, oh, why not? And I enrolled in college, and I just fell in love with it. Like the minute I was in like that kind of commercial kitchen space within the college environment, it's such a nurturing space for like young chefs, or just people who are like enthusiastic about food. And it just it just kind of grew and spiraled, and every environment I went in, I was just like a sponge. I just, I knew I, as a mom, as a woman, as a mother, I would have to work a lot harder, and I wasn't necessarily able to put in the same hours that kind of like a young single lad would be able to put in. So I was very specific about where I chose to work, and I made sure that every minute that I was there was being like really well utilized, because I was trading off time with my kids to build this career. And it served me well, and I did so many things that, you know, I'm so proud of like doing. And, you know, I worked my way up in kitchens to like head chef positions. And, you know, I don't know if you're aware, but there aren't many head chefs that look like me or are mums, or, you know, so that definitely felt like a massive accomplishment for me. And then to have my own business and to grow that business into something that was self-sustaining during, you know, the middle of a global pandemic felt like a really great achievement. And probably also like one of my biggest regrets is like letting it go when I did, because I felt like, I now feel in hindsight, like I probably could have pushed through and come out the other side of that, but it just felt so impossible at the time. But yeah, I've really enjoyed it, and I felt like I am quite content with what I've achieved there and what I've done, and you know, I'm ready to kind of move on and know, have a new career in this area. But now I've just become more and more kind of optimistic about the prospect of like combining both kind of skill sets and you know, working with young people around kind of like identity and culture, and using food as a medium to kind of tell the like breathe through the experiences a little bit, and then using spoken word as a vehicle to tell the stories and all of that. So yeah, there's a lot of like exciting things that you can do by like merging art forms and all of that, and chefing it's just another art form, another way of creating in it. So yeah,
nice.
Here's this episode's writing prompt. Write about your dream three-course meal, highlighting sensory details such as tastes, smells, and sounds. Elaborate further by describing your dream dinner guests and the location. This is a Culture Word production. Thank you to our funders, The Space and Arts Council England, recorded at Silver Lining Music Studio.